episode of the Double Comma Club with your host, Nicole Ruth of the Ruth Team, the number one lending team in Colorado. Join us today for this special episode of the Double Comma Club, where Nicole welcomes Tracy Wilson of Investment Property Exchange Services. You can find him at ipx1031.com. IPX 1031 has provided its clients with superior qualified intermediary services for over three decades, and each year they assist thousands of clients and their tax and legal advisors by providing proven exchange solutions that best achieve the client's goals of enhancing their business portfolios and preserving equity. But he'll tell you more about that at the beginning of this episode. This is a two-part episode. There is so much to learn. This first one covers the basics you need to know as an agent and as an investor about the 1031 exchange to avoid capital gains taxes. He will give you guidance no matter how creative you think you are. He will have solutions and some recommendations to keep you out of hot water with the IRS. Listen to this episode now.
So, Mr. Tracy Wilson, love that you're joining us. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh, I'm thinking, can I book before next July 4th? But I work with a lot of investors. My husband and I, in fact, we had a small house that we did a 1031 exchange with you earlier this year, because we were kind of like, we don't know where that's going. Now, could we have held onto that home and continued to allow it to grow? Yes, but we also had an opportunity. And so I'd love to hear kind of where things are going. And I definitely know there's a lot of money moving in 1031 exchanges. I continue to hear the story where people get caught not fulfilling some of the guidelines, right? Like that you've got to spend all the money you make, not just the net revenue. And there's nuances that I know that you're going to share that I know catch people by surprise.
Sure. You know, you don't have to do the exchange for all the money. If you sell for 300 grand and you buy something that's 250,000, you can certainly do that. It's just that you'll pay the tax on the difference, the amount you buy down. But you're right. If you want no taxes, buy something that's equal or greater in value. So yeah, you're spot on. You guys did that, didn't you?
We did. Well, we didn't spend it all. We paid some taxes. Although having said that, my CPA was very happy about that. He says you could use a little bit of a loss.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Those weird CPAs. All right. Okay. We're going to dive right into it here. We're going to first start talking about 1031 exchanges, and then we're going to transition into something that I think is probably as important, if not more important, and that is the coming proposed tax changes. So I'm going to dive into this. I like it when people feel free to interrupt and ask questions as we go along. Let me tell you a little bit about our company. The name of it is Investment Property Exchange Services. You can see with a big long name like that, we're trying to short it up just IPX 1031, which is also our website. It's a very user-friendly website. Who the heck are we? We are 33 of us now, attorneys and CPAs nationwide, including our paralegals and the exchange coordinators and the banking staff. We're about 400 some employees. We're wholly owned by Fidelity. So we have some very deep financial pockets. We actually are the largest qualified intermediary in the United States. We even do exchanges internationally as well. So last year, we did just a smidgen under $11 billion with a B dollars of 1031s in Colorado. We set a record, of which I own the franchise, of $600 million in 1031 exchanges. That was for all of last year. I need to tell you something. So far this year, as of July the 9th, Friday, numbers. So we are on target. Who knows what's going to happen? We're on target to almost double last year's volume, which last year was a record-breaking year already. So there is a heck of a lot of 1031 exchanges being done nationwide. So we do all types of 1031 exchanges, the regular forward exchange. We do reverse exchanges where you want to buy, client wants to buy their new replacement property first. We also do exchanges on things other than just real estate. We do exchanges on oil and gas and water rights and minerals and leases, air rights. We also do exchanges in which the client may want to make improvements or do some construction to their new replacement property. And there's a way to do that while the property is parked or temporarily owned by us, IPX. And just for whatever it's worth, We used to be able to do exchanges on businesses, like when somebody sold, for example, a 7-Eleven. We did the exchange not only on the real estate, but also on the gas pumps and on the hot dog rollers and on the Slurpee machines, you know, the capital assets of the business. We are no longer able to do those personal property exchanges, and then, you know, cars and trucks, boats, equipment. We were the largest exchanger of intellectual property for Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Oracle. All that is gone. It was wiped out of the tax code with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We can only do exchanges now on real property. If you have any questions about a 1031 exchange, give me or Danita a phone call. We can help answer your questions right there on the phone. But as a good resource, our website, you can actually start an exchange immediately online. You don't even have to talk to anybody. We have calculators that'll figure out what your capital gains and basis is. I prefer that you would call me in that regard, because the calculator is limited in terms of its assumptions, and I can do the same thing in about 3 or 4 minutes, and you will actually understand what's going on. We also have calculators for the 45 and 180 days, and we have a knowledge center that has a single page answer to any 1031 exchange question you could possibly have. And a brand new feature on our website are little 1 and 2 minute videos that you get right off the homepage on almost any topic on 1031 exchanges. So enough of all that. As I said, I am in charge of the franchise for Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming. And again, we are part of the Fidelity family of title insurance companies. That's Alamo Title, Chicago, Commonwealth, Fidelity. In Colorado, Commonwealth is actually called Heritage Title. We also own and do business through Lawyers Title, Tycor Title, Security Union Title. And then as a part of that big family, IPX is the exchanger for all those title insurance companies, again, nationwide. All right, let's dive into it. That's enough housekeeping and advertising. What the heck is a 1031 exchange? What is Section 1031 of the tax code? It's like 2 pages out of the thousands of pages of the tax code that allows for non-recognition of gain. That sounds like CPA geek speak for the following. If you're selling an investment piece of real estate, and let's say the gain is $100,000, not a lot of people know this, but the taxes, the capital gains taxes on that $100,000 are going to be about 30-ish percent. Now, wait a minute, where is that 30% coming from? Briefly, because we're going to take a deeper dive in just a minute or two. But that 30-some percent consists of these capital gains taxes. It's either 15 or 20% on the appreciation. But then when you're doing investment real estate, there's always unrecaptured or the recapture of depreciation. It's taxed at 25%. Then both of those gains are hit with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, at 3.8%. And both of those gains, the appreciation and the depreciation recapture, are taxed by the state of Colorado. It's now 4.55%. You add all those capital gains taxes up and they blend together to be about 30%. If you are dealing with someone selling property, investment property, in a high tax state like California or New York or New Jersey, Chicago or Iowa, Illinois or Iowa, for example, California's income tax rate for capital gains is 13.3%. You can see why then that the capital gains taxes can range anywhere from 30 up to as high as 40%. So when you're dealing with this, we're talking about investment property. So now I need to pause and need to go. 1031 exchanges are not for the sale of someone's home where they live. It is not for your personal primary residence. There's a better deal in the tax code, section 121. So if you've lived in your home for at least 2 years out of the most recent 5, then when you sell it, you get to have your gains tax-free. That's better than a 1031, which is merely tax-deferred. Tax-free up to how much? Well, if you're single, you get up to $250,000 tax-free. Or if you're married, filing a joint, you get up to $500,000 tax-free. And oh, by the way, you get to use that personal home exclusion over and over and over as often as you want, once every 2 years. So it's no longer a once in a lifetime exclusion. So that's the sale of someone's home where they live, their personal primary residence. I want to get that out of your brains, because everything else from here on out is about the sale of investment real estate, rental real estate. So if you do an exchange instead of just selling it, we'll walk through the rules of what that looks like. And then you buy some replacement property, or you can buy multiple replacement properties. Guess what happens? The gains are actually rolled over. They're transferred into the new property. And then you don't have to pay the 30 to 40% capital gains. Yes, the gains are rolled over into tax deferred into that new property. Let's take a little bit of a deeper dive. Let's say you bought a piece of property for $150,000. I know these numbers are probably may not be relevant in today's market, but it makes the math or the thinking about it a little bit easier. Because what we're going to do is look at some accounting, but we're not going to do debits and credits. We're just going to use pictures. So you buy some rental house for $150,000, you rent it out, and then years later you're going to sell it, and it's gone up to $200,000. Well, a lot of people think, okay, I bought it for $150,000, I'm selling for $200,000. I think my gain is about $50,000. I'm ignoring commissions and closing costs. Well, that is all true to a certain extent, but we want to get some definitions down. When you do a 1031 exchange, the property you're selling is called the relinquished property. You're giving it up, you're selling, you're relinquishing it. And the property that you're going to buy that you will exchange into is called the replacement property. There's too many R's. I've already had my, so I'm just going to call it the old property and the new property. And so the basis transfers from the old into the new property when you do an exchange. And so too does the gain. The gains transfer, and that's the whole point of doing a 1031 exchange. Defer, transfer, roll those gains into the new property. Do not have to pay the 30 to 40% capital gains taxes. But we need to reemphasize a concept that I just brought up. You buy a house for $100,000, you rent it out, 5 years later, you sell it for $150,000. And everybody thinks, again, ignoring commissions and closing costs, that their gain is about $50,000. Well, just as a reminder, the original purchase price of the house has been going down. On paper, it's going down. It's an accounting phenomenon, and it is unfolds as like this. The original purchase price, $100,000, has to be depreciated. If it's residential, it's over 27 and a half years. If it's commercial, it's over 39 years. And so this is residential property, a single family rental house. And that means that there should have been about $3,600 and some odd of depreciation expense every year. We did that for 5 years. We have a total of $18,000 of accumulated depreciation that has got to be subtracted from the original purchase price so that on paper, the book value of the property is actually $82,000. In real life, it's selling for $150,000. But on paper, it's only worth $82,000. So that means when you sell it for $150,000, there's not just one gain, the $50,000. There's actually a second gain, a gain due to the recapture of depreciation, $18,000. So that really, the total gain from the sale of this property is $68,000. So whatever the client thinks their gain is, it's going to be a heck of a lot more. That's concept number one. Concept number two, when you sell a piece of real estate, there isn't just one gain, there are two gains. Gain from appreciation, the gain from the depreciation. So what do these taxes look like that we're trying to avoid? 15 or 20% on the appreciation, 25% on the recapture, then the Affordable Care Act on both of those gains, and then there's the state of Colorado. Grand total, let's add them all up. It adds up to be about $20,000 in total taxes. Is that really 30%? Well, let's do a little math. 20,000 divided by 68 is 29.8%. That's close enough to 30% for me. So if you are talking to a client, or if you are a client, you're thinking about selling property, you're pretty safe in the assumption that if you sell and do not do a 1031 exchange, that your tax hit will be about 30% of a much bigger gain than you realize. All right, so now let's go back to the picture accounting. Bought the property for $150,000, selling it for $200,000. Again, we thought the gain was $50,000. We know better now. that basis of 150 has actually been shrinking down because of depreciation, and the gain is larger than we thought. It consists of two chunks of gain, 50,000 because it went up in value, and 25,000 because of the recapture of depreciation. So when you do a 1031, there isn't just one gain being rolled over. There are actually two different chunks of capital gains being rolled into the next property. All right, I think that's it for basic math, accounting. Can you sell one property and buy multiple 1031 replacements properties?
And that's a good place for a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Your home purchase has a long-term impact on your ability to build financial wealth. We at The Roof Team will continue to be alongside you well beyond the closing date. Whether helping to refinance a loan, transitioning to your next home, or building multi-generational wealth through investments, we are committed to finding you solutions other lenders can't or simply won't. We look forward to helping you build wealth through real estate by generating passive income for a more financially secure future. Get started today by visiting theroofteam.com. That's theroofteam.com. Your resource for helping you build wealth through real estate.
And let's continue the conversation.
You sell one property and buy multiple 1031 replacements properties, and you sure can. You can diversify. What about, can you sell multiple properties and mush them all together, combine them, and go buy one perhaps bigger replacement property? Yeah, you can consolidate. In fact, you can do any mix and match arrangement. So here are the six rules of a 1031 exchange. I like unfolding 1031s linearly. In other words, going from what you're selling, I always use the red Monopoly house on the left. That's the property you're selling. And the one that you'll eventually exchange into, the replacement property, I put it on the right-hand side, and it's the green Monopoly house. So let's start with the sale. There you are, you got a buyer. There are several things that change when you do a 1031. You, first of all, you need, by law, a qualified intermediary. Sometimes we're also called an accommodator. There's a shameless plug for our firm, IPX. So to do an exchange, you absolutely have to have a qualified intermediary. And then there are a couple things. The sales contract needs to be assignable. That's the only way that we, IPX, can be assigned into it. So just make the contract and or assigns or call us up and we can send you 1031 language. Also, when you're there at the closing table of the sale, the monies have to be wired from the closing table, the net sales proceeds, to us. By law, the qualified intermediary has to hold those monies during the 1031 exchange process. Okay, so the closing of the sale is done. To be clear, you need to call us before the closing of the sale so that we can get documents to you. We use DocuSign. Get them signed so that they are in place at or prior to the closing of the sale. You call me up afterwards, a day later, a week later, a month later, it's too late. You're going to get taxed. All right, so that starts the exchange, and there are two timelines you have to be aware of. So you get 45 days to identify and 180 days to actually close on the purchase of one or more of those properties that you identified within the first 45 days. So there you are now as a buyer, no longer a seller, of course. You're now a buyer of the new replacement property, and you're allowed to identify up to three properties that you might want to buy. By the way, there is the ability to identify more than three. It's called the 200% rule. And there's also another fancy rule called the 95% rule. We're not going to go through them here in the essence of time. But just know that if you want to identify more than three, call me and I can tell you how to do that rather easily. Okay, so all that said, now you're ready to close on the purchase. And that means that we have to be assigned again into the purchase contract to do the exchange. And then we will wire those monies out to the title insurance company. And you've now finished your exchange inside of 180 days, and you don't have to pay the 30 to 40% capital gains taxes. So that's the mechanics of doing a 1031 exchange. And an emphasis on like kind. You can sell almost anything. rental condos, rental houses. You can sell strip to shopping malls, commercial, oil and gas, water rights. You can even sell raw land. And like-kind does not mean, I just said this a minute ago, that you have to go buy more land. You could buy, in fact, sell land and go buy a commercial office space. You could sell multifamily product and exchange into oil and gas. Like-kind simply means that it's real property for any other real property, as long as it's in the United States. If you want to make it like you don't remember what I'm about to say, just make it and or assigns. That's all you have to say, and or assigns. If you want, you can say, hey, this is going to be a part of, you can leave out the hay part. This is going to be a 1031 exchange at no expense or inconvenience to the buyer. And it really doesn't affect the buyer at all. So all you have to do is say it's going to be a part of a 1031 exchange. Most real estate agents have their own language. You can get the language off our website or call me up or Danita and we can send you the language pretty easy. 1031s are supposed to be about long-term capital gains. Now, I usually don't go through this, but because we're going to be talking about big changes, proposed changes in the tax code in just a little bit, we need to make this distinction. 1031s are supposed to be about owning investment real estate for longer than a year. Because if you own it longer than a year, the type of gain, the increase in price, the appreciation is a long-term capital gain. If you own a piece of real estate and you sell it less than a year, then the type of gain you have is short-term capital gain, and that means you get taxed at ordinary income rates. So 1031s are only about long-term capital gains. That means you cannot do a 1031 exchange on a fix and flip. And developers, generally speaking, cannot do 1031 exchanges. So a question comes up, how long do you have to own the old property for it to qualify for 1031 purposes? The answer is, there's no answer. It's a shame. The IRS never bothers to state definitively how long you should have owned it. It's always about your intent. Was it held for investment? Was it used to produce income? I'm telling you that there's a very good rule of thumb. 1 year and 1 day, it creates long-term capital gains. And if you hold it for 2 full years, there's even a safe harbor under a different part of the tax code. What about the property that you buy, that you roll your gains into, the replacement property? How long should you own it before you sell it and maybe do another 1031 exchange? Or just sell it and pay the capital gains, whatever. The answer is, there's no defined period of time. Again, it's always about intent. But again, the really good rule of thumb is 1 year and 1 day. And of course, there is that safe harbor under a different part of the tax code. 1 year and 1 day is pretty typical.
So one has had a client, sold a property, bought 3 properties using a 1031 exchange. He now wants to sell one of the 3 he bought. Is there any nuance to that? He wants a 1031 exchange that one.
Have they owned the 3 properties, including the one we're talking about, and selling? Have they owned it for at least 1 year and a day?
She did not say.
Let's say they did.
Yes.
Let's just go there. And the answer is yes, they can exchange it, no problem. The only nuance is to call me, 303-883-5844.
And then Amos asks, are there rules about a cash out refinance timing after a 1031 exchange? He gives an example.
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So you did the exchange, you bought the new property, your exchange is done and over. The very next day after your exchange is over, you can refinance and pull the cash out, no taxes. That's great. What about the old property? What if you decide to pull cash out a month or 2 or 3 before you sell and do the exchange? The IRS says, wow, you avoided one of the rules of doing the exchange and they will tax and they could even collapse your 1031 exchange because you pulled money out prior to the sale and the start of the 1031. So where this is applicable, this is why this is a great question. People will say, Tracy, if I sell for $400,000, I would like about $40,000 out of it. I know I'm going to get taxed on it. I know it's called boot, but I need the $40,000. I want to pay off some credit cards. I got a kid going to college next year. And I tell them, you can do that. You can pull $40,000 out, but you're going to get hit 30-some% on it. That's $12,000 of taxes on the $40,000. Instead, do what we just talked about. Leave all the money in the exchange. Put all the money into the new replacement property. And then when your exchange is over, the very next day, refinance, pull the $40,000 out, and there are no taxes. yes, you might pay a little bit higher in interest rate. You may pay some more points or fees, but it's got to be better than paying 30% capital gains or $12,000. So, Nicole, obviously, you're in the lending business. Does that sound to be true?
It sounds to be very true, especially since you can roll the cost of that refinance.
Yes. Right into
the loan. So it's not going to cost you anything out of pocket. You'll still walk away with the full $40,000. That somebody asked, Edward asked, do you pay any taxes if you lease it for a year and a day and then move into it as a personal residence?
Oh, beautiful question. The answer is no, maybe, perhaps yes. So why isn't there a definitive answer? Here's the deal. So you do an exchange, you buy the new property, you treat it as a rental for the first year. Maybe you want to be super duper safe for the IRS. You want to be squeaky clean, fine, rent it out for 2 years. And then you move in. And then you make it your personal primary residence. Then year two for 5 or 7 years down the road, whatever, you decide to sell the property, you're done. What you've done is you've turned an investment property that you acquired under Section 1031, you've turned it now into your personal primary residence. Wow, that means that if you're, for example, married, filing joint, that you get to use your $500,000 exclusion? Yes, you do. Does that mean all of your gains that you deferred by doing this exchange now come out tax-free? No, not quite. The IRS says, yes, we will let you use your personal home exclusion, but not all of it. They apply a fraction called the qualified use fraction. And what I'm going to describe is best if you could look at your hand. And we've got five fingers. To do the following, you need to own the property, the new replacement property, the one you exchanged into. You have to own it for 5 years, five fingers. And at least the thumb and the index finger are the first 2 years that you rent it out. And after that, you move into the property and you live there. But you live there for 3 years. And let's say that you sell it at the end of year number five. Now, you don't have to sell it. You can stay living there. But just for the story, let's say that you do sell it at the end of the fifth year. So what happens? The IRS says you get to use your $500,000 exclusion, but not all of it. The fraction is the numerator, the top number, is the number of years that you've lived there, 3 years. Divided by the denominator, the bottom number, is the total number of years that you own the property, which was five. So that makes our fraction 3/5. And 3/5 of 500,000 is 300 grand. So instead of getting $500,000 tax-free, you only get $300,000 tax-free. Nonetheless, it's a pretty good deal. It's the only place I know of in the tax code that allows you to take deferred gain and turn it into tax-free money. I do want to mention, though, that when you do this magic trick that I just outlined, remember when you sell the relinquished property, the red Monopoly house on the screen, and you did the exchange, how many gains were there? There were two chunks of capital gain. The gain because the property had gone up in value over all those years, and the other gain was from the depreciation recapture. This magic trick where they use the, you get the 300,000 in my made up example, tax-free, does not apply to the unrecaptured depreciation part. That part will always be taxable unless you die, and then it becomes tax-free to your heirs. Does that help on that story or example?
That really helps, because I talk a lot about, that's my retirement strategy. I'm going to buy my retirement home with one of my investments. So that's great to know how to work those numbers. You do have a couple people ask kind of a very similar question, asking, can you buy a duplex or something that has additional rental opportunities, whether it's a mother-in-law suite or some sort of situation? Can you move into it where you're living in one side and you're renting out the other and still use it for a 1031 exchange?
Good questions. Yeah. So you need to be a little careful. Let's say, for example, that the property you sold that you started the exchange on, let's say that it was sold for 300 grand, and the property you're going to buy is a $500,000 piece of property, and you're going to live in part of it. Maybe it's a duplex, whatever scenario you can think of or dream of, you're going to live in part of it. The part that you will live in cannot count as a part of your 1031 exchange. So in my example, when you sell for 300 and buy for 500, then the 300,000 of the 500 has to be the part that gets rented out. If you want to live in part of the new property, then it can only be the $200,000 that is not part of the exchange. Was that, I want to make sure, did I explain that clear enough?
Well, and if it's a duplex for 500, the theory would be is each side would be valued at
250. Yeah, and you sold for 300. So yeah, one side doesn't count because that's where you live. The other side is 250. You sold for 300, so you have a little bit of a buy down.
So this would be a CPA type of a question in determining the percentage of the property that was used for each position.
I would certainly encourage CPA to use it. They'll use two different factors. They'll either use the economic utility or they'll use a simple square footage. But I can tell you common sense usually prevails. If you buy a $500,000 house and you say, oh, I'm going to live upstairs and it's the nice part and it's only worth $100,000 and the bottom basement is not finished, you're going to rent it out, that dog won't hunt.
And Dee, this might be a question or two ago. She says, if you don't rent it and you just let it open, what effect does that have?
Well, that's good. I like creative people out there. They're the ones that get audited. If you do an exchange and you buy some new property, this type of question usually crops up when you're talking about a vacation home. Maybe it's up in the mountains. And you say, well, I really don't want to rent it. Have you seen what renters do to a place? You know, I'm just going to let it sit empty for a year and then I'll move into it or whatever. The IRS will say, you're not required to rent it. That's true. But is there a reason that you didn't rent it? You need to advertise it. You need to list it at fair market value rent. And in today's market, if you tell the IRS, I just couldn't rent it, they're really going to come down on you and they'll probably fail the exchange because anything can be rented today. The demand is quite high. This type of question came up a lot more in 2008 and 2009. Then maybe you could have gotten away with not, quote unquote, not renting the property out at fair market value. But in today's market, if you're not showing rental income, and the IRS will know, you have to report the income on your Form 1040, your expenses on Schedule E. They don't see any, and they noted the fact that you did an exchange the year or two prior, because you file the form 8824, they're going to know. So you need to rent it out at fair market value, or they're going to come looking for you.
Can you buy a 1031 exchange property and lease it to a relative? If so, how long?
Sure, at fair market value.
And then if you sell a property and 1031 exchange into a new property worth more than the old property, can you then have somebody else buy in for a percentage of the new property?
You could, but you'd be essentially, let's say that the new investor that comes along is going to buy 25% of the property, meaning you'll end up owning the remaining 75%. And when you have someone buy, in my story, 25%, you're effectively selling them a tenant common interest or 25%, and you will be taxed on the capital gains. I suppose you could sell that investor and do a 1031 exchange. That is possible.
Okay. So yeah, he's saying like if you sold something worth 500 but buy something worth $1 million, can another investor come in for like 300,000?
Yes, they certainly could. And you can do it a variety of ways. If you sell for 500, then the minimum amount that the exchanger needs to buy is 500 grand. And the other investor could come in as a tenant and common owner for the other 500,000.
You've been listening to The Double Comma Club. Never miss an episode. Subscribe at thedoublecommaclub.com or your favorite podcast venue to hear more success stories. Get free tips on how you can get on the path to becoming a millionaire through real estate at any age. If you enjoyed this, you might also enjoy our YouTube channel. Just look for The Roof Team on YouTube or visit our site, theroofteam.com.